Anthony was a teacher on Brunei, on the island of Borneo. While teaching, he was unexpectedly diagnosed with a brain tumor and given 1 year to live. Wanting to ensure that his young wife wasn't left penniless when he died, he hatched a plan to write and sell a few novels to provide a sum for her to live on after he was gone. The next year, he worked feverishly, writing and selling 4 novels to publishers, successfully executing his plan. However, it turns out the doctors were wrong. There never was a tumor. His frantic writing pace was completely unnecessary, only brought upon by the urgency of his imminent death. During the year of 1959 to 1960, Anthony Burgess wrote The Doctor is Sick, Inside Mr. Enderby, The Worm in the Ring, The Wanting Seed, and One Hand Clapping. He would later produce his most well-known book, A Clockwork Orange, which will be immortalized in film by Stanley Kubrick. In later years, Burgess referred to this prolific period as his terminal year because he was writing against the clock, knowing he was about to die. Despite his false diagnosis, he lived to age 76, eventually succumbing in 1993. Think back to moments in your life when you got a lot done in a short amount of time. Whether it was cramming for an exam or cranking out an amazing proposal for a client, it's kind of incredible what we can accomplish when we believe we're running out of time, right? And the ironic thing is, we are. Every single one of us has a finite number of days on this planet. And with each new day, that means we're getting closer and closer to the inevitable end. I mean, I don't want to depress you, but that's kind of reality. Yet, we tend not to live that way. We live, and we work, and we relate to others as if we have all the time in the world. So on today's show, as we enter a new year, we're going to talk about what it looks like to infuse a sense of imminence and urgency and vision into our world and into our work and into our relationships in 2024. What would it look like to live and work with vision this year, as if this was our terminal year, without the knowledge that we're going to die in a year? This is Daily Creative, and my name is Todd Henry. Welcome to the show.
I was at the house with my kids, my family, walking laps around the kitchen island, literally shaking. My hands were shaking and I couldn't sit in a chair. I had to get up and walk around because I was so terrified of what have I just done.
That's my friend Josh. Today, he's a successful consultant and strategist who helps companies simplify their messaging so that anyone can quickly understand what they do, why they matter, or how they're different. He's worked with everyone from fledgling startups to Fortune 100s to help them tell a better story.
The core of what I do is working with organizations to get a ton of clarity around their messaging so that they can export that clarity to every touch point, from websites to videos to decks to all of the above. We just really want to eliminate any confusion so that people can clearly understand what you do, why you matter, and how you're different. And so that's what I help organizations do.
But back in 2018, he was where a lot of creative leaders find themselves, maybe even you. Pretty good job, pretty good salary, really great clients, yet restless, ready for a change. Not totally sure of what that even looked like.
I just remember a moment of thinking, wow, I'm 38 years old. Am I going to be 48 years old working at this company? And I could not imagine that. I couldn't fathom that. Like, wow, I couldn't picture myself here, you know, 10 years from now. And so for me, it was like, well, either I can wait around until somebody else makes the decision for me, or I can, you know, get busy figuring out, well, what is the thing? What is next?
What Josh was going through was actually one of the most important parts of developing a vision, but one that we often don't talk about enough: discontentment. We know that things could be better, even if we don't have a full picture yet, and we begin to realize that the path we're currently on won't take us there. This is a critical moment, and what you do in moments like these will make all the difference. Will you stuff the discontentment down, try to ignore it, maybe talk yourself off the ledge, or will you allow it to nudge you toward the unknown? These moments are a lot like standing with 1 foot on a boat and 1 foot on the shore. Part of you wants to jump in the boat and go out in the water and explore and have an adventure. But part of you likes staying on the shore, where everything is predictable. I mean, it's where you've always been. Maybe you've never even been on a boat before. And you can stand there for a while with one foot on the shore and one foot in the boat. But once the boat begins to separate from the shore, you either need to jump in the boat or stay on the shore, or you're going to end up in the water. And that's the feeling that many of us have or have had at critical junctures in our life, where we're making an important decision, whether it's a career decision or a relationship decision, or even just a decision with our work or with a project. We know what we need to do. We know that we need to get in the boat, but we like the security and the stability of the shore. And that's exactly where Josh found himself. So he tried keeping one foot on the shore and one foot in the boat. He began toying with the idea of dialing back and going part-time, an idea that the company was open to, but rightly so, had some conditions and guardrails that were important to them. Some of the conditions made sense, and some of them maybe not so much. So Josh called a meeting with his bosses.
The conversation went, well, you guys have basically made it clear what it would look like for me to work part-time. What if I just worked no time? What if I just said, you know what, I think maybe the best thing is just for me to make a go at it. I didn't have some sophisticated business plan. I had like one project that was going to last me for maybe 3 months. And beyond that, I don't know what the future holds, but I do know what it holds over here. And I don't want to go down that path. This seems to be taking me somewhere new. And I feel like I need to just walk that path. So I quit, went on my own, and started seeing what sorts of new trouble I could get myself into.
Brave decisions like leaving a job in Josh's example, or even starting a project that you're afraid people are going to laugh at, or sharing an idea in a meeting. Those are the beginnings of vision. It's tempting to think that vision always comes first, that you have everything planned out in your head before you act, and maybe sometimes that's the way it works, but more often than not, it's the other way around. Vision evolves over time, like film in a dark room. You see a couple of pieces of the picture slowly emerging and you think, oh, okay, I know what this is going to be. So then you take a step in that direction. But then a little more of the picture emerges as you act. And then a little more, and a little more, and the vision slowly changes or morphs into something that you never could have expected. And maybe it's not quite what you initially thought it was going to be. And one brave step after the other is how vision evolves and eventually reveals itself. Which means that there's something you have to get used to if you want to do brave work, if you want to lead bravely, because it's never going to go away. And that one thing is uncertainty. In fact, uncertainty is a key requirement for brave action, whether it's in leadership or just in doing your own creative work. If outcomes were guaranteed, there would be no need for bravery. If you were certain that putting $10,000 into a company would yield a tenfold return in 5 years, you'd be foolish not to do it. If you were certain that your business would thrive and provide for your needs for decades to come, you'd already be doing it. If you were certain that your idea would be well received, you would have already written the proposal and presented it to your manager. But if these were certainties, everyone else would be doing them too. Life is a universe of probabilities, not certainties. And that's what makes leadership so difficult. This means you can't seek certainty. Instead, you have to cultivate clarity.
If you're gonna step out and do something, just know, like, you're gonna face those days where you can't sleep, where you wonder if you just worked your last gig, right? Is the phone ever gonna ring again? Is this the project? Is this the one that, you know, that finally I screw it up and everybody realizes I have no idea what I'm doing, right? All of that stuff, like, you're going to face all that stuff, but comfort is the enemy of character. I mean, if you want to find somebody who you admire and who you respect and who you sort of model yourself after, I guarantee you they have not pursued comfort.
Since 2018, Josh's journey has been full of ups and downs. To borrow his phrase, he's gotten himself into all kinds of new trouble. It's taken years and lots of experimentation and going down some dark alleys, but today he has more clarity of vision than ever.
People really need to understand the difference between taking a risk and gambling. Those are two different things. in my opinion, a risk is I've come this far in something. Let's take it a little bit further. It's uncharted territory for me, but it's a sort of natural extension of past decisions, past projects, past experiences, things that I've sort of built on, right? So let's take that next step. It's the unknown, but it almost is logical.
You can watch a video of my full interview with Josh or read a transcript in the Daily Creative app at dailycreative.app. If you want to learn more about Josh's messaging strategy sprints or the framework he authored called The Story Square, check it out at joshuagott.com. So if, as in Josh's example, discontentment is often the beginning of vision because we realize what we don't want, we have to figure out what it is we do want. Because the reality is, discontentment alone isn't going to get you where you want to go, vision-wise. I was once in a conversation with a young creative pro, and in the midst of the conversation, there was a lot of discussion about dissatisfaction and frustration, relational tension on the team, and he expressed a desire to maybe go launch something on his own or to go change his situation in some way. And my advice was a very simple question. Are you running from something? Or are you running to something? There's a significant difference between the two. When you spend your life running from dissatisfaction, it's going to follow you everywhere you go. It reminds me of one of my favorite Benjamin Franklin quotes, "The discontented man finds no easy chair." Running from discomfort is not a life strategy. It's not a career plan. It's not even a good way to spend a Saturday afternoon. We need to make certain that we're making our choices based upon what we're moving toward rather than what we're moving away from. And this same principle applies to our creative process. Defining creative direction by declaring what we're not isn't a strategy. This doesn't motivate people, and it doesn't cause people on the team to want to do their best work. There must be a clear definition of what we are, where we are headed, what our vision is, and some rails to help us stay aligned and moving in the right direction in whatever work we're doing, whatever we're charged with, whatever our responsibility is. Do you know where you're going, or are you driving by looking in the rearview mirror? And that's the essence of vision. But that doesn't make it any easier, because for most of us, the most uncomfortable question we could ever face is, what do you want? Now, there's a conversation stopper, right? But what if we could find a different way to ask that question so that it didn't stop us in our tracks, but instead energized us to move forward, inspired us to do something courageous, and brought vision into focus? But let's not do it on an empty stomach. In the heart of Newport, Kentucky, there's a quaint little mom-and-pop barbecue joint. Checkered tablecloths, plywood floors, picnic tables out back. This local gem is called Webb's. But for one night in the summer of 2016, it wasn't called Webb's. It was called Snakebite, the brainchild of commercial photographer and creative mad scientist Jonathan Robert Willis, or John Bob for short.
The idea behind the Snakebite was really, if fear was not an option and failure was an option, what would you do? And I realized that, like, I would open a restaurant. So we opened a restaurant for one night.
You heard that right. For one night, John Bob was going to transform Webb's into something all his own, something uniquely inspired by his passions and his past.
I love cooking. Actually, it's what I wanted to become. I wanted to become a chef before I pursued photography.
Oh, wow. Didn't know that.
Yeah. I love serving. I love cooking. I love eating. So a few years ago, I took my family out west and we did it on a shoestring. We camped. We went to a bunch of national parks. It was, you know, I think one of my favorite places still to travel and explore is the American West. It's just one of the most beautiful places. And, you know, bringing the family with me is just so fun. So we lived off of this pinto bean recipe that I like created with green chili. I'm from New Mexico, so green chilies are really big, and green chili powder is something that you can really only find in that part of the country. So developed this recipe for these beans, and we cook it at home quite a bit, and, you know, decided, man, there's a couple things we could do with this.
That pinto bean recipe became cowboy beans, a featured side item on Snakebite's menu. They pair nicely with an order of Old Johnny cakes, two fried red pepper cornflakes with smoked chicken and stewed tomatoes. or any number of the snake bite entrees, from the Elkhorn to the Tarkington to the Bullet in the Gap, for those of you looking for a vegan option. Oh, and don't forget the rye, lemon, sugar, and absinthe cocktail called the Rattlesnake, guaranteed to kill rattlesnakes or make you see them. Oh, and in case you were wondering, what's up with all the snake imagery?
We called it the snake bite because I'm like terrified of snakes. And so with this, with the restaurant that we opened, it was like, let's just give it a try. And like, I ended up partnering with an executive chef who just retired and shared with him the menu, and his ears perked up. But yeah, we opened for one night. We served, it started getting some attention, and I like scaled back our communication about it because I was like, this could be a real disaster. Like, this could be really bad.
But it wasn't. In fact, the line to get in wrapped around the block. John Bob and his team served over 250 people that night. He gave himself permission to try something that absolutely could have failed, which for many of us is our biggest fear. And yet that snake didn't bite.
I think that the fear of failure keeps us from trying so many things. And I think that you know, sort of pressing through that fear to try something is, well, let me put it this way. The sting of actual failure is oftentimes less harmful than not trying something because you're afraid of failure.
But we think it's almost like in baseball, I'm afraid of getting hit by a pitch. So I'm like really shy. And then when you get hit by a pitch, you're like, oh, it wasn't so
exactly bad,
you know? But it's the idea of it that is worse than the actual impact.
Exactly. Yeah, I think the other thing is that I think you need to stop asking for permission to like try things, because we left these challenge cards on every table, which was, you know, if fear was not an option and failure was, like, what would you do? Don't ask permission to open a restaurant. Don't ask permission to do this art project that you're doing. Don't ask permission. Whatever it is that you're going after, it's like, just do it. Yeah. Like, and that's just a fun exercise in itself.
If you want to see John Bob's photography work, you can do so at johnbob.com. That's johnbob.com. Probably the greatest domain name in history. And if you want to hear our full 40-minute conversation about how he uses passion projects in his photography work to keep his creative flame alive, you can also do so in the Daily Creative app at dailycreative.app. I love John Bob's framework so much because we often hear the much more naive question, what would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? But failure is always a possibility, especially if you're trying hard things. I much prefer John Bob's framework, which is, what would you do if fear had no power over you and failure was an option? I think that's really a more meaningful way to think about vision. So, just to kind of wrap up our conversation for today, we've talked about two important concepts as it relates to vision and creative courage. The first is that your vision is often sourced in discontentment, the things that you know could be better, but you're not really quite sure yet how they could be better. And the second question I think we can ask using John Bob's framework is, what if fear had no power over you in 2024 and failure was an option? What might you try? What might this year bring your way? What new projects might you start? What new ideas might you introduce? How might you lead your team differently? That is the essence of acting bravely in the face of uncertainty. Throughout this series, we're going to be talking about more elements of acting bravely and enacting creative courage. And on next week's episode, we're going to talk about some of the obstacles that can get in the way of brave action, and some strategies we can use to act in the face of uncertainty. If you'd like to listen to the full interviews with Josh Gott and John Bob Willis, you can do so in the Daily Creative app at dailycreative.app. There you'll also find additional resources, supplemental material, and other things to help you apply what we talked about today. Thanks so much for listening, and be brave.